Right, welcome back to the podcast, Steve and Sully Study. I have a really, really cool guest in front of me. This is a podcast I've been looking forward to for some time because I'm obsessed with cars, and this particular brand, Romans International, I've been following for a very long time. So Tom Giaconelli, welcome. Welcome to the podcast, mate.
Thanks for having me, man. It's good to be here.
No problem. Quick question. First time coming to Woodbury House. This is a bit of a plug for me. What do you think of the space? What do you think of the art?
I love it. I don't go to enough galleries, and some of the stuff you've got here is so cool. Is it that Black Lorette?
Black Lorette, that's correct.
He's got some awesome pieces here. I'm interested.
Good. Okay. Well, I like the sound of that. there's clearly a crossover between high-end supercars, the art market, watch market, etc. Would you say a lot of your clientele has those passions? They buy watches, collect art, and also buy luxury supercars?
Yeah, I think watches is the obvious one. Most people that are into cars are into watches. Art is definitely the investors that invest in cars, I think, see art as a you know, another thing to invest in, and another, you know, thing to be interested in. It's not, you know, we don't have a lot of art in our showroom because it's a lot of glass. But yeah, it's something that there's probably not enough kind of synergy between art and cars. Obviously, we sell moving art, and a lot of the cars we sell don't end up being driven. So in some ways, you know, we've got art in the showroom.
Yeah. You mentioned something there, which sometimes people in the art world, maybe even in the car world, and maybe even in the watch world, sometimes shy away from using the word investment, because the primary use for a car is to drive it and enjoy it. The primary use for art is to display it, enjoy it in your home or office. And the primary use for a watch is to tell the time and have it on your wrist. True. But there's no getting away from, certainly in the last 10 years, all of these assets are performed, within reason, quite well. Mm-hmm. Do you see more and more people buying cars purely to protect their money and maybe make money over the long term?
Yeah, both long term and short term. You know, there's a big kind of movement in our industry of people buying to flip cars, buying to make money on them. And which, you know, it is a bit of a shame that you're kind of taking away from the, as you said, the primary reason people should be buying these cars is to drive and enjoy them. But you can't escape the fact that, you know, there's a money element involved, and some people are in it for the money. You know, as much as it's nice they still have the passion for it, but they are in it because it's potentially a moneymaker. And so, certainly the ones that are buying, you know, the market over the last few years, brand new cars are making strong money over list. They're not so much right now, but they have been over the last couple of years. So it's really brought in a whole load of people who have just been like ordering Range Rovers, ordering Porsches, purely just to flip them, make a profit.
I was, as I mentioned off air, I've fortunately enough interviewed a guy that will class my friend now, Maximilian Kuber from the Gumball, well, who's the founder of the Gumball Rally. I went on to the Gumball Rally and met some really interesting people. And I kid you not, Tom, there was a young guy who must have been early 20s, mid-20s, and American guy. And I think, from memory, his family were in TV rights in Italy, out of all places. Like, it was kind of a weird thing. Talking to him, he didn't strike me as the person who would have come from that world. But anyway, he said, we were talking about cars. He said, oh, let me show you this. And he showed me this bright yellow Pagani Zonda. And when he showed me the price of it, it was like $25 million or something ridiculous. And I remember when these cars were kind of always very expensive, like a million or just on the fringe of being a million pound or dollars. Why do you think these type of cars like Pagani Zondas and these very rare exotic cars have gone up in value so much?
Well, Pagani as a brand has become such it's this amazing niche, amazing craftsmanship. They make unbelievably stunning cars. I mean, the first day I joined Romans back in 2011, we had a Pagani Zonda F Club Sport in the showroom, and I hadn't seen one before. You know, when I started working at Romans, I was like, oh my God, I fell in love with that car. And it has Paganis just have that effect on people. You fall in love, you see what they're like, the interiors, you hear the noise of the V12s, you know, and you know, Pagani's a fairly young brand in the car world, but it's just created this kind of cool kind of niche. The fact that Horatio gets involved, this is the founder, Horatio Pagani, anyone that buys a Pagani, you instantly kind of have a relationship with Horatio, with Pagani, and it's unlike, you know, what else is out there with Ferrari. You're dealing with a main dealer, Porsche, you're dealing with the main dealer. With Pagani, it's got something else, it's got something special about it, and you know, that's part of the reason the cars have just absolutely taken off in value. Obviously rarity is a major factor as well.
I agree. I've never driven a Pagani, nor have I ever been in one. I think I might have sat in one when it was turned off, but what I love about them, especially I'm not really so a fan of the Huayra.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it looks as nice. Because it's turbo, I don't know. Is it turbo supercharged, I think? I don't feel like there's that. I don't resonate with it as much. I love the Pagani Zonda.
Yeah.
All different variations of it. I love the fact that it sounds like a F1 car or a former F1 car. And I like the ones which are manual. I'm a little bit worried because over time, I feel like these type of cars, which are kind of raw, exotic and exciting, are just going to die off because of all like the emissions and everything, you know, the regulations and the electric cars. Are you afraid that cars are no longer going to become sexy?
I think that the thing about those cars is they're not going to suddenly disappear. They all still exist. You know, it's the new car supply that you start to get a little bit worried about. But look, there's, you know, I think over the last few years, everyone's started thinking electric's the only way forward. But more recently, there's kind of other things happening with hydrogen fuel and things. And, you know, everyone has said they're going to stop making naturally aspirated V12s. Ferrari are supposedly about to bring out another naturally aspirated V12. So the future's, you know, we can get wound up on it a little bit, but personally, I think the future is still good. And the fact that all these cars previously and all these historic cars, it's not like, I don't believe we're not going to be able to drive them. We can still celebrate them. There's still going to be so many events where they're going to be appearing at. So we can really, you know, really get involved in the sort of older cars and the older generation. But I think there's still a bright future for the new cars as well, because I don't believe electric is the only way forward.
On that note then, you know, you eat, sleep and drink cars, right? That is your life, Tom. What would you say has been the best car that you've ever driven?
Best car that I've ever driven? I mean, there's so many different ones. It's hard to put, it's hard to say one. I mean, look, you know, we're talking about new cars. I drove the Ferrari 296 the other day, V6 hybrid. Wasn't expecting it to be all that great. Had seen some good reviews about it, but I was genuinely blown away by how good that car was. And it surprised me and that's what's given me confidence that you can still make a downsized engine, a V6, still sound really good one and still drive amazingly. I mean, Ferrari are the masters still. But look, I mean, driving a Bugatti Veyron for the first time is one of the most memorable experiences of my life for sure. Because just the speed and acceleration, just never experienced anything quite like it. It's literally like being on a roller coaster. You know, I have driven a Pagani Zonda. That's pretty insanely special as well. But yeah, look, the list goes on.
You know that when you drive something like a Pagani Zonda, right? V12, very, very expensive. Was it like a manual version as well?
Yeah.
And am I right in saying, like, has it got all, like, the ABS and everything else that goes with it, or is it kind of raw?
I mean, it's pretty raw. I'm pretty sure it's got ABS.
Does it make you a little bit frightened that when you're driving a 5, 10, 15 million pound car, that one force move can cost you a lot of money?
Yeah, I mean, I've been lucky enough that I've never had any little scrapes or anything, touch wood, but yeah, you've obviously just got to be super careful, very steady foot. You know, we obviously move these cars around the showroom at very, you know, tight spaces and it's low speed, so I'm pretty sort of experienced with moving these cars around. So as soon as you can actually get it, you know, on the road with a bit of open road ahead of you, you can put your foot down with a bit of confidence. And yeah, so far, you know, haven't had any problems.
Can I ask then? I know this might sound a little bit intrusive, but I'm just curious because you are, you know, the director of Romans International. So it appears from the face of it, you could have any car you want. What cars do you gravitate towards? What cars have you owned before, Tom?
I've always had, because I've lived in London most of my life and street parked my cars, I have moved out recently, but I've always had something that's a little bit under the radar. So I've had a lot of C63s, Mercedes, C63 Black Series. I've had two or three of those. And actually looking back, having the C63 parked on the streets of Wandsworth overnight seems a bit mad. But, you know, that car's become more special now than it probably was when they first came out. I've had a few Porsches. Porsches sort of do a good job for me. 911 Targa S, Targa GTS I've had. I've had a Cayman GT4, which is a great driver's car. I'm currently driving a Land Rover Defender 90 V8. Since I've had kids, I was like, right, I've got to get something that's a little bit more practical. But yeah, I find myself, you know, I'm not one for like big flamboyant Lambos as much. I love Lamborghini. But it's more down to because of where I've lived, where I can park my car. It just hasn't been suitable to have something that, you know, takes a lot of, gets a lot of attention.
Yeah, yeah. Talk to me a bit more about the business then. So you're the director, you came in 2011, you're in control or responsible for marketing and buying.
Yep.
Your dad was the founder, 1994, am I right in saying?
94 is when, Romans International sort of officially founded. He's been in the industry his whole life though.
So he was selling like Vauxhalls and stuff like that, is that right?
Fiat was where he sort of, built his business before Romans, yeah.
Okay, so it's a brand that is, you know, stood the test of time. I think it's definitely nationally very, very well known. I mean, I've got friends of mine that will go out the way to buy their Porsche. I mean, I know one guy who's called Steve as well. He's literally gone out the way to buy his Porsche. I could probably mention his name off air and you'll probably know who he is.
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, because it was always a goal and a dream of his to buy a supercar or a luxury car from Romans International. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about buying the car, it's about buying the right car from the right organisation, and Romans has that, right? And that's kind of the thing that we want to create here at Woodbury House. Mm-hmm. It's not about just buying the art, it's about buying the art from the right gallery.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, you've taken on a massive, massive, massive responsibility. Mm-hmm. What's the pressures like being a director of Romans International, Tom?
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure. Obviously, being a family business and ultimately my dad being effectively my boss, you know, he was the founder, he was the 100% shareholder. And I came into it very much as an employee, like anyone else. He didn't want to treat me differently. I didn't want to be treated any differently, and I wanted to earn my way up the business. So I came in to do a bit of marketing. That was sort of what I knew a bit about, and sort of quite quickly found myself running the social media channels. Obviously Instagram hadn't even started when I started. So I set up an Instagram account, got a Twitter account and a Facebook account, and naturally gravitated towards that. And I kind of found my own niche within the business and started doing things that no one else was doing. So, you know, and at the beginning, everyone was like, oh, you're wasting your time on social media. You know, you're not going to sell cars from social media. And, you know, you look today and social media is one of our biggest sources of inquiries and sell a lot of cars from social media. So I kind of knew what I was doing, and I never felt like I had huge pressure. Certainly when I started, you know, things are a little different now and I've got a lot more responsibility, and my dad is, you know, taking a step back and allowing me to sort of run the business. And, you know, but marketing is still, you know, it's my passion. I still feel like marketing is how you get a competitive edge. You know, there's a lot of dealers now that sell supercars, and, you know, how you market yourself, I think, is a way of building your brand, certainly digitally, you know, building your reputation. And that's where you're going to build trust and get to people like Steve who now wants to buy his car from Romans International. And there's a lot more people like that as well. I mean, there's the people that have looked at Romans over the years when they were a kid and always kind of said, oh, my dream is to buy a car from there. But there's all the people over the last sort of 5 to 10 years who have followed us and feel like that's where I want to buy my car. You know, we've got nice premises, great people, and, you know, we've built a very good brand. And so that's where it becomes less about scrolling through Auto Trader looking for the best price car. You know, you can have, you know, I'm not going to say we're the cheapest and we're not the most expensive, but we've got the right brand and we've got the right cars. And so that's where, you know, we're going to draw people in and they're going to want to buy their car from Romans International.
Mm. Me being transparent, I've had lots of conversations with friends of mine who are into our watches, cars, etc. And it's a common conversation we have over a beer, over a coffee, over a glass of wine, you know, which car would you have and that kind of stuff. And when Romans International come up, there has been people that I've known have bought from Romans International said, you know, it's not the cheapest, but because they have a bit of a premium, what they stand for is quality and great service. And everybody's always said that it's been 10 out of 10 with the service and the follow-up aftercare with your clients. How do you perfect that? You know, it's because it's one thing saying it on a cool marketing slogan, but it's another thing actually do it. How do you get the culture right at Romans International?
That's the thing. It's first of all having great people and keeping great people, and we've got some people that have been at the business a long time, 20-30 years, since the beginning, and you know, those people have got so much experience, they know what they're doing. But it's also the fact that we've curated, we're incredibly particular about what we buy. First off, you know, we walk away from a lot more cars than we actually end up buying. And if you look at our stock, pretty much everything is special in some way. It's either the lowest mileage car out there, the highest spec, it's a limited edition, it's the best provenance. You know, we hand select every car that we've got. So it kind of starts there of knowing, okay, you know, for us, it's if you're buying a car from Romans International, you know you're buying something that's a little bit special. It's not going to be a run-of-the-mill car. And we prep the cars, we make them look like they should. But yeah, really it's down to the people we've got. I believe we've got great salespeople. You know, I don't actually get really that involved in the sales. I kind of leave that to the people that can do it better than me. And they build relationships naturally. And we kind of, when people come to Romans, we're kind of letting them into, you know, in a way, our family. I know it sounds a bit cliche, but it's kind of, we are a bit of a family at Romans, and kind of letting people in is kind of like is a homely feel. And yeah, some people will just want to come in, pick up the car and go, but other people like the experience. They want to be looked after. They don't want to buy a car from an auction, from a private man they don't know, or you know, from a little shed down the road that you have no idea who they are. They want to buy from people that they trust, and you know, and that's, you know, after the sale, that's, you know, it goes a long way to keep that relationship.
Yeah.
And you know, not just following up, checking how you're doing, but coming back in just for a coffee, just to shoot the breeze, you know, bring the car in or come to one of our events. You know, that's where you build your relationships.
Yeah. I know you said you're not in sales per se, but obviously being a director, being around the cars all the time, being buying and head of marketing, quite naturally, occasionally there'll be sales opportunity, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, it's probably organic, right? It just comes up. I'm not going to ask you to do a kind of a formal role play here, but I'm intrigued to know how Romans International kind of deals with prospects or clients from a sales perspective, because my role as the founder here is actually dealing with sales consultants, dealing with clients, repeat business, etc. And I'm always learning. I like the psychology of it. Read books, listen to courses, and just like to see how other people are doing it. Mm-hmm. Like when someone walks in off the street into Romans International for the first time, how they greeted?
Well, we've actually just installed a reception for the first time, because normally, especially because we've built another showroom, normally when you walked in, all our salespeople are sort of out on the floor, so you're instantly greeted by a salesperson, so you can kind of cut to the chase and instantly, you know, ask questions. But at the moment, yeah, so you'll arrive and, you know, people do like to sort of wander around in their own time. You know, they'll say, oh, no, I'm fine, I'm just looking. And then before you know it, they're super interested in something. But a lot of the inquiries are over the phone, a lot of the inquiries are via email through our website. So, you know, they're very qualified leads. It's not, you don't get so many people just wandering around thinking about what they might have. You know, it's more a case of, right, I've seen a car you've got, I'm interested. You know, can I come down and drive it? Which actually doesn't happen that much because people kind of know what they're getting. But yeah, look, it's a lot of stuff's done over the phone. A lot of people don't even come to the showroom. So, you know, the experience can be as you kind of want it. We're there really to guide people and inform people. So just answer any questions. We're not, you know, we always say we don't need to sell these cars. A lot of the kind of the shrewdness in our business is what we buy. It's in buying the right cars at the right money with the right specs. And once we've got them, you know, they kind of sell themselves. Obviously, you want a good people to speak to guide them, to give them good advice. But really, it's not, we don't have to sell really that much.
Yeah, understood. One thing, it must be quite frustrating in business and also selling luxury cars, because we get it in the art space, it's a given, but the typical tire kicker to someone who's actually really interested in actually maybe buying one of the cars, how do you work out who is the tire kicker and who is just there, or who is there to actually invest into one of these cars?
It is hard because we've learned a long time ago you can't judge a book by its cover, and we've had people walk in, you would never believe in a million years they would buy a car, and they have. And you know, there are a few giveaways, but you know, obviously if they turn up in a car that, you know, a $5,000 A class or something, the likelihood is pretty slim, but we still give them our time. You never know who they might know. And you know, we did have a guy turn up on a moped, $5,000 moped, ended up buying £1 million Aston Martin 177. So, you know, we know not to kind of judge anyone, but at the same time, you know, we do get a lot of people coming in who do just want to take up your time. And, you know, there's no real way of kind of stopping that. You know, we've got enough people on the floor that we can give people time. You know, we can show them around some of the cars, and then, you know, then you've got to sort of cut to the chase a bit. It's like, you know, are you interested, or are you literally just here to, you know, show your kids the cars?
Because it's a bit of a tricky one, right? You know, let's just, obviously employees have got to be very mindful of it, but more as an owner, someone who's the mm-hmm. face of the brand. I was going to ask you actually, because I did see one of your videos earlier. So someone actually did turn up on a £5,000 moped, and they end up buying a £1 million Aston Martin. Did you know this person beforehand?
No, we didn't know who he was. We the way he spoke wasn't me that dealt with him, but the way he spoke, he sounded fairly serious. And then when he turned up on a £5,000 moped, we were like, is this definitely serious? But yeah, he went through the deal, and it was just quite cool, I think. And you know, he just scooted off having paid a deposit, and you know, we ended up delivering the car. But yeah, there's other situations that are similar in some ways that you just can't. And the thing with our business is, where, I don't know if you've been down, but where we're located, it's quite an open site, which is a double-edged sword, because we get people just wandering in who we haven't, you know, they haven't appointed them. So, which is nice to have that open door, and people can just turn up and look at the cars and stuff. But it's, and some people literally walk in and buy a car as a walk-in. So it's got its positives, but the negatives is we can't plan for them to arrive. You know, if you're behind closed doors, you know exactly who's coming through the gate, and you can sort of plan and have everything ready. So it is a bit of a double-edged sword. So we're you know, the staff are well-trained in dealing with, you know, whether they're a tire kicker or a buyer, you kind of have to just treat them the same way.
Yeah. I was going to actually ask you about your site. I haven't been recently where you've actually opened up a second. Mm-hmm. Is it in Banstead? Is that where you are? Yeah. So the you've got a second showroom, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Right next door. So it's all sort of, it all feels like one site.
Okay, okay. But I always remember it was all, do you call it an A road there? You're on
the A217. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So great free advertisement almost because of the positioning, and people cannot help when you drive past it to stare at the wonderful cars. The downside, there must have been attacks, arsons, or people just being quite like idiotic towards your premises.
We get asked this quite a bit, and surprisingly, I think first of all, because the cars all look so immaculate, it's people are pretty respectful. You know, there's been, I can count on one hand, there's been times where someone might sit on a bonnet or something like that for a picture. But there's definitely never been an attack. There's never been any arson, that's for sure. And I think, you know, generally people come to our showroom because they love cars and they want to have a look at them. So, you know, people are very respectful, and very rarely we get, you know, any issues at all. And there's obviously the security cameras everywhere, and we've got 24-hour monitoring. So as soon as someone sort of kind of acts up, you got someone shouting at you from a speaker. So it's kind of, you know, you quite quickly we can resolve anything.
We do get people walk through our doors who are specifically looking for an artist. So, for example, Blet the Rat, and they'll go, okay, this is the type of work I've got, this is the budget, etc. We do have people, though, that will come for a marketing campaign or walk through the door or word of mouth, and they'll say, right, I've got 100 grand to invest. What do you think I should be investing into? So my question to you is, a person with 100 grand to invest into a car, what would you recommend, Tom, they should invest into?
As an investment, personally, as we discussed earlier about everything going towards electric or hybrid and sort of just more new age technology. So I think the cars to invest in are the more analog cars. If you're talking under 100 grand, you've got the likes of, you know, an Audi R8. You know, they've stopped making those now. So the next R8 is supposedly going to be electric, and, you know, they're not going to make that V10 engine anymore. A V10 manual Audi, that's sort of like a real, you know, a real treasure now. And they're probably 60, 70 grand, 80 grand maybe for a good one. That personally, I think would be a good investment. You know, like for most of the investments and most of the sort of, you know, the good returns, I think you have to go obviously higher budget, but there's definitely, you know, I think you've got to be passionate. I wouldn't purely buy a car under 100 grand just as an investment. I think the returns are not going to be all that great. I mean, they can be good, but I think you want to absolutely love that car, be able to drive it, be able to enjoy it, and if it goes up, happy days. And there's obviously some that are going to more likely to go up.
Yeah, okay, cool. Same sort of question, but obviously you might have given me a slightly different answer because of the price. If I were to ask the same question, if I came to you and said, Romans International, give me some advice or your suggestion, I've got £1 million, what should I put that £1 million into?
£1 million right now, there's a few good ones. A lot of the really special stuff has gone now past £1 million, but the ones that I think are still have some legs, I actually think of McLaren Senna. McLaren Sennas are still around 700 to 800 grand, and you know, they haven't quite crossed over yet into being sort of a modern classic. They're still, you know, what are they, 4 or 5 years old, so they're still in that kind of awkward stage of not quite being the newest thing, not quite being a modern classic. But those, you know, it's an incredible car. One, I know not everyone loves the looks, but it is, you know, it's a combustion engine car, no hybrid. They're right-hand drive. They make them right-hand drive for the UK. There's only 500 worldwide. And it's named after, you know, one of the greatest drivers, most iconic drivers of all time. So, you know, I think assuming McLaren is not going to make anything else like that, I think the Senna, because they list it that much as well, they list it 800, 900. So actually, I mean, we're putting one up for sale today, coincidentally, which listed at 920 grand, and we're putting it up for 795. So it's, you know, it's a saving on list. It's a hypercar, and personally I think they'll cross over £1 million within probably the next 2 to 3 years.
McLaren Senna, would you say it's one of the hardest cars to get out of?
I'm trying to think last time I got in one, but I don't know. I'm quite nimble. but I don't know. Is it?
I'll tell you why I asked that question. I went to Shmi 150, to the Shmi Museum. That's how you pronounce it. He's obviously got one, a blue one.
Yeah.
And he said to me, right, get in the car and shut the door. And I went, okay. He said, I'm going to warn you, I don't think you'll be able to get out.
Oh, really?
I went, okay. So I got in. It's on my YouTube channel. I couldn't get out. I didn't know how to get out.
I think there's a technique.
It was like the button above. I had to push something up.
That's half of it, knowing where the door
lies. I had no idea how to get out. And I literally sat there for about 5 minutes while him and Chris were laughing. And I had no idea how to get out of the car.
It's the same thing with starting the car. Because you don't think to look above you to start a car or get out of a car is quite unusual. One of the quirks about the cinema.
I like the unique thing as well that you can see through the door and you can see the road.
Trousers, yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's quite cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you know you shouldn't be curving any alloys because you can actually see exactly where the curve is.
Okay, so Ferrari, Lamborghini, Pagani, Koenigsegg, Bugatti, McLaren, Porsche. What is the best brand in your opinion?
It depends on so many things. For us as a business, it's between Porsche and Ferrari. We probably sell more Porsches, but Ferrari is where the bigger margins are because they go up to, you can sell LaFerraris for 3 million, 4 million. And that's been very good for us. But Porsche is kind of like our core. We have so many Porsche enthusiasts. There's such a massive community for Porsche. People love them and we sell so many of them. We 911s, we sell, a good few a week. And that is kind of our bread and butter. So, as a business, I would probably, it's a toss up between the two. You've got to talk about Bugatti because it's just something about Bugatti which just feels more special than anything. Perhaps Pagani is in the same breath, but something about Bugatti, I think, just kind of, it's like the king of the hypercar. All the brands have their own little kind of niches of why they're so great. Even McLaren makes some amazing driver's cars. Lamborghini, I love the way they look. I love the way they sound and it has got a huge appeal. Lamborghini Urus has probably been the best SUV for the last sort of 5 years, best-selling SUV, and that's been a great car for us as well.
We all know that the Bugatti is a Bugatti, right? But I mentioned I went on to the Gumball Rally, and on the last leg, we all drove down to Inter Miami to play this football game, and there was the Gumballers, and there was like fans of the Gumball, which are all driving with a convoy, and there was a guy who had a Chiron, Bugatti Chiron. And I kid you not, even though the car got a lot of attention, there's a duo called Daily Driven Exotics, they're Canadian guys who are based in LA, and they've got this massive YouTube channel. And they had a SVJ Aventador with a Gattani exhaust.
Okay.
And it's called an F1 Gattani exhaust. Mm-hmm. And I kid you not, the
sound.
Fucking thing would absolutely blow your eardrums off if you were next to it. And it's funny because the Chiron, I don't even know how much they are today. 2 million? 3 million?
About three-ish, yeah.
It was a black one, really nice one. Lovely, like really nice car, but when they both pulled up and they were revving their engine, everyone was around the Aventador because of the howl.
Yeah.
Would you say for bang for your buck, would you say the Lamborghini Aventador SVJ with an extreme exhaust, is that the one that's going to draw the attention?
Definitely, yeah. They used to call it the panty dropper. I'm not sure we're allowed to call it that anymore. But that is, the Aventador is just, it's got so much road presence. It's so dramatic. And the sound, especially if you put a tricky exhaust on, it blows your eardrums out.
Yeah. Am I right in saying, I don't know what the data is, but if you were to look at the amount of older Porsches on the road still in comparison to Ferrari, Porsche hands down beats it all day long? Because they're reliable.
Definitely wouldn't surprise me. They are more reliable, or certainly the older Porsches are. I think these days Ferrari's reliability is pretty good, and actually Porsche's is starting to become slightly more questionable because of all the electrics and the Porsche Taycan has numerous sort of glitches. But yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all, because the old Porsches do sort of seem to run forever.
So my question was leading to this is, would you say Porsche, let's call it a Porsche Turbo, Porsche Turbo S, would you say that's a perfect all-round supercar that you can drive daily?
Yeah, the Turbo S is known sort of quite widely in our industry as the perfect daily supercar, because it's easy to use. All the tech is really good. It's got loads of safety tech. It's rapid and fast, and you can get your kids in the back. You've got a decent-ish size boot or front boot. So yeah, it is. But you know, a lot of people would say it lacks something. It lacks, the noise isn't great. It lacks a little bit of soul, but it is an amazing car. So, you know, and they normally hold their value pretty well. I mean, the market's been a bit up and down with them, I could say, over the last year or two, but normally they do hold their money.
Do you know, like, some people in life are one or the other, like, you know, they'll prefer this over that or whatever else. I do actually believe that people are either more Ferrari than Lamborghini, or Lamborghini mm-hmm. over Ferrari, and the same with Rolls-Royce or Bentley.
Bentley,
yeah. Now, I'm more Bentley over Rolls-Royce, personally, yep. and I'm more Lamborghini over mm-hmm. Ferrari. Is that a true statement? Do people prefer Ferrari over Lamborghini, or vice versa?
There's definitely a divide, I'd say, between Ferrari and Lamborghini, as much as there are, I know, clients that have got both or had both, but they're more one or the other. I mean, my dad is very much a Ferrari guy. He is not a Lamborghini guy. I am more of a Lamborghini guy. I'm not, as my own car, I've not got that much interest in having a Ferrari. Maybe as a collectible investment, but as a sort of day-to-day car, I'd all day long rather be driving a, you know, a Huracan or a Urus over a Ferrari. But that's just me personally. So yeah, I think the statement is definitely true. It seems to skew a little bit younger for Lamborghini and slightly older for Ferrari. It's not always the case. But yeah, there's something about Lambo that just, it takes a certain type of person. Maybe they're more into certain types of music and things like that. But yeah, they've definitely got their own sort of separate identities.
And with Bentley and Rolls-Royce, is it kind of the same?
With Bentley and Rolls, I think it's harder to define, but there probably is a bit of a divide. I find Bentley clients and Rolls-Royce clients slightly more similar, but there is a little bit of a more old school British thing for Bentley. And Rolls-Royce seems to attract more of an international client base, I would say, from our perspective.
Okay. Can I ask this interpretation of your definition? What is the difference between a supercar and a hypercar?
For me personally, it's one, the way a car looks. Obviously, performance stats do come into it, but also where a car sits within a model range is quite important. So with Ferrari, you've got your halo cars, which are the 288 GTO, F40, F50 Enzo, LaFerrari, those are the hypercars. You've got an SF90 Stradale, which is faster than pretty much all of those cars, but it's not a hypercar, it's a supercar. So it's not all down to performance. It is, I think more than anything, it's where a car sits within a model range, within a manufacturer's model range. So obviously every Koenigsegg is a hypercar, every Pagani is a hypercar, every Bugatti is a hypercar. Porsche, the only hypercars for me are the Carrera GT and the 918 Spider. Those sit in a different bracket to everything else, even though the new GT3 RS might be faster around a track. A GT3 RS is definitely not a hypercar. But the lines can get a bit blurred. But yeah, I think, yeah, it's the way they look, stats come into it, but more than anything, I think it's actually where it sits in the model range.
I was glad you touched on one car there. I was going to ask you, 918, Porsche Carrera GT, which one is better? Which one would you prefer?
Personally, I prefer the 918, but look, the Carrera GT is one of the all-time greats. And as an investment, I'd probably say the Carrera GT, although they've gone up so much in the last couple of years that it makes the 918 look actually quite a good buy today. But the 918, I'm one that likes the modern tech, the usability more than I probably like, you know, hammering it around a track.
McLaren F1 or a McLaren P1? Which one is better? Which one would you prefer?
I mean, if you talk about values, obviously the McLaren F1 is by far the better car. I mean, but there's something about the P1, and if you take money out of the equation, I prefer the way the P1 looks personally. But I've actually never driven a McLaren F1, so I can't compare in terms of the way they drive. But I love the McLaren P1 to drive is an absolute, like, it's such good fun. It's a little bit hairy, it's a little bit edgy, but it's like, you know, that's one way to sort of wake you up in the morning if you want to take one of them out.
Well, that I mean, I've only ever owned one Ferrari. It was a 458 Italia, and I went from at the time a Gallardo. It was a yellow convertible, the first version, and then I went to that, and I actually went back to a Gallardo where I went to a Performante.
Oh yeah.
The reason being, even I always say the same thing. I feel like the Ferrari is a much better car, it was, but it didn't make me as excited. And in actual fact, it used to make me a little bit nervous in the wet because the back used to be a little bit twitchy. The good thing about the Gallardos or any of the Lamborghinis, they're four wheel drive, exactly. So they used to stick to the floor. So I was going to ask you that question about the P1. Is it quite nerve wracking sometimes?
It is very nerve wracking. I mean, I first sat in it with a friend of mine who took me out, and he's a very good driver, so I sort of felt fairly comfortable. Even with him, I was like, oh my god, I feel right on the edge. And it's just, it's a little bit skittish. It's got so much power. Obviously, the hybrid kicks in, the DRS. There's a lot of tech as well involved in it. So you kind of like, it's a real treat for the senses. But yeah, just a little bit hairy, which, you know, sometimes is good.
Same question, Ferrari Enzo or LaFerrari, which one would you prefer? Which one's the best?
That is a tough one. That is a very tough one. I love the Enzo. I love the kind of, it feels so much more historic. But the LaF is just, I think the LaF is just another level as a car. So probably going to have to choose the LaF.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Am I allowed to ask, what is maybe Roman's International like most expensive car that you've ever had up for sale?
The most expensive car we've ever had, we've had the LaFerrari Perta. We've had a few of those because we don't tend to get involved in classic cars, which are where the values start to go really crazy. You know, we've had LaFerrari Pertas, which are knocking on the door of 4 million. We've had, I think, three or four of them. So I think that's our most expensive car. We have had a McLaren F1, but it was a good 10, 15 years ago when they were only 2 or 3 million. Obviously now they're, you know, 10 times that. But the LaFerrari is probably, because it's probably the most expensive modern car you can buy. I know there's a couple of sort of crazy Lambos like the Veneno and things, but yeah, you very rarely see those in the UK.
I haven't actually checked out your age, Tom, but you seem like pretty young.
I'm 38.
38, you're same age as me then.
Oh, you're same age?
Yeah, okay, yeah. Cool. So being a 38-year-old, a director of this massive, massive brand that has been, you know, is celebrated across the country, I mentioned earlier, there's obviously a lot of pluses and also a lot of pressures on your shoulder because you need to run this ship really, 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 really well. What are your goals? What is the vision for Romans International over the next 5 or 10 years time from now, Tom?
I mean, my vision was always to be the best supercar dealer in the country. But it's, you know, that's a kind of very vague thing. I mean, I set myself goals, you know, on a daily, weekly, monthly, annual basis. And I don't try to look too far ahead. Obviously, you've got some plans in the pipeline, whether they come to fruition or not. But it's always just to become better at what we do. We know what we're good at and it's just fine tuning it. Every day is a kind of like, you know, another step forward. And, you know, obviously some days can be a step back, but it's always just looking at fine tuning more than anything. And there's so many things you can do better. There's so many, you know, as things come out, there's things where you have to evolve. But for me, it's just all about making Romans International a great place to work for our staff, because that is really, you know, we're so reliant on our team. You know, we're not, you know, the difference with myself and my dad, how we've sort of run the business is that I think my dad was such a great salesman and a very sharp, clever businessman. But I think if you took him out of the business 10 years ago, the business would probably go into, you know, I think it wouldn't survive without him. Whereas I've very much come into it from a way of, I want to build a structure for the business that you don't need one. So if one person does leave, nothing is affected. And so to the point where I could leave or I could step back, and the business would still absolutely carry on as good as it ever was. So it's building that structure and building a team and a culture, which is the sort of that's kind of my motivation. And, you know, what drives me is to just make it a great place to work. And then from that, you know, we build the business from there.
You kind of answered the question just because I was going to ask this other question, but you kind of answered it. But I was just curious if you were to adapt your answer. So you've got really good brands out there, such as Joe Beccari, Tom Hartley, Amari, Bob Forstner, I think you pronounce it like mm-hmm. that. What separates Romans International from the competition?
Our stock, I think, is actually the thing that separates us. Obviously, the brands you've mentioned are great businesses. You know, we do plenty of business with Joe Macari. He does all our servicing for us, or used to before he sold his service business. But they specialize in a different area to us. They're more race cars. You know, the other dealers you mentioned, Tom Hartley does a bit of classics. He does a bit of everything. For us, what separates us is I think we really specialize in modern supercars. We don't really ever get involved in classic cars. We highly curate our stock list, so we only have really special examples. We don't, you know, you're not going to see any 40, 50,000 mile cars on our website. You're not going to see anything that's been in an accident. You're not going to see anything that's sort of a bit edgy condition. I think it's hard to put that across online. I think people notice it when they come to our showroom, how immaculate everything is and how special each individual car is. So the stock, I think, is what separates us. But then I think past the stock, it's our people. Because I know, you know, we're not, our name is Romans. It's not Tom Giaconelli or Paul Giaconelli. It's about the brand and as a whole team of people. It's not, we're not reliant on, you know, one or two people to sort of drive the entire business.
I've had a lot of entrepreneurs on my podcast, really, really successful ones, people that have sold businesses for a lot of money. And there's a lot of common traits that a lot of highly successful driven people have got. Someone in your space is Tom Hartley. I've actually had Tom Hartley in my podcast, and I would say he's tenacious and he's a go-getter. If I were to have Paul Giaconelli on my podcast, being his son Tom, describe your dad. What's he like?
So my dad is... he's a million miles an hour. We're quite different, but we agree on a lot of things. You know, he is a very natural salesperson. People gravitate to him. You know, he lights up a room. He's got a great sense of humor, a lot of charisma. And yeah, he's I'm not going to say he's my role model because we're quite different, but I obviously respect him hugely and look up to him. And I'm incredibly fortunate that he built a business before I was there, that I could then take and take further. But yeah, I don't know if you'll get him on the podcast. He hates doing stuff like that, but you never know. He might do.
Put him in a good word for me, Tom.
I will.
Okay, last couple of questions. Outside of like this Romans International business, you're a normal human being, and normal human beings have other passions, have families, and have projects they focus on. What do you do, Tom, outside of Romans International?
Yeah, having a work-life balance is crucial. I don't always have it, but it's kind of like my ongoing thing is striving to get more of a work-life balance. I have two kids now, one that's just 3 months old, which...
Congrats, mate.
Yeah, thanks. But it kept me up all last night. So if I get a bit weary towards the end, let me know. But look, I'm very into sort of, you know, I'm very sociable outside of work. I like seeing friends, going out, going to bars, going for restaurants, going to music concerts, things like that. I'm very into sport. You know, I play a lot of tennis, like keeping fit. And yeah, I think, you know, and then, but, you know, becoming more and more of a family man, I guess, you know, you lose so much time by having kids, and obviously time is our most precious currency. But what I've realized, I think, you know, when I was in my 20s, I was super, super driven. I still am, but I think kids makes you take a little step back. It did for me at least, where I think, oh, there's more to life than just work. And as much as the passion is still there to drive the business forward and so many things I haven't done yet, but having kids did change my mindset a little bit to just be like, okay, you know, when I'm older, you know, in my deathbed, am I going to care that much about how much money is in my bank account? Or, you know, the kids and growing a family has become, you know, massively important to me.
Yeah. You mentioned about your dad, actually, because I, again, just talking about, I'm always intrigued about business and sales. You said he's a natural born salesperson. What is a natural born salesperson?
Partly gift of the gab. I think it's drawing, and my older brother has got it as well. And, you know, they transfer energy in a way that an unnatural salesman, I think, can't do. But, you know, there's different styles of sales, and obviously not everyone gels with everyone, obviously. But he's just got a way about him where, yeah, I think people gravitate and you kind of get kind of like caught up in, you know, what he's saying, and you believe everything he's saying. And, you know, it's definitely a skill that's been mastered, and he's very streetwise. Yeah. And he knows how to make money. He's built a very successful business. But
why did he call it Romans International?
So Romans existed when he was a kid. So it was a successful car dealership in like the 60s and the 70s. It went into liquidation, I think, in the 80s. But it was the dealership that he used to look up to as a kid and look at the cool cars of that time. And so he brought out the name, changed it to Romans International. Obviously we were Italian family. So, it was the Italian link as well. And the fact that it kind of had a name already, he really resonated with it.
Okay. Makes sense. Last question. So when I got into business for the first time in sales, I came up with a bit of a mantra, like a bit of an incantation, an affirmation. And I try and live and breathe it still today, not always perfectly, but I try and remind myself of it. And it goes like this, Tom: be happy, never content. Mm-hmm. Now, if I were to ask Tom Giaconelli, what does be happy, never content mean to you?
Well, never content is obviously to not settle with what you've got and always strive to get something more. Being happy, you know, is thing is, I almost think being content is a happiness in a way. But yeah, I think happiness is fulfillment for me. And yeah, I'm certainly, you know, as much as I get fulfilled on a daily basis for this or that, you know, I'm certainly not fulfilled in my career. There's so much more I want to do. I'm certainly not content. But happiness feels to me like more of a state of mind, whereas content is kind of like looking back or being okay with the whole bigger picture. But we could go into a whole philosophical debate about this one.
All right, thank you very much for your time, mate. I would love at some point to do a part two, but at Romans International, if you allow me.
Get my dad involved.
Yeah, get your dad involved. And really, really appreciate this. Subscribe, enjoy, look at Romans International and Tom. Be happy, never content. And again, I really appreciate your time, Tom.
Pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.